When pro-lifers are confronted with justifications for abortion, whether that's something as benign or absurd as overpopulation or something as intense, as heartbreaking as sexual assault, we need to not refute and we need to not resolve things quite yet. Stay tuned for more on both of these errors that pro-lifers often make, myself included. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Pro-Life Guys podcast, a show dedicated to equipping you with the tools that you need to have compassionate and compelling conversations about abortion so that together we can change minds, save lives, and transform our culture. My name is Cam. I am the host of the show. Thank you very much for coming along for the ride. Whether you are a longtime listener or brand new and this is your first episode ever, I appreciate you for being here. I especially appreciate all of you who have subscribed to our YouTube channel. I put out the call a little while ago, especially shout out to all of the Protect Life Michigan interns and staff. I did a talk for them a couple weeks ago, and they responded in absolute wonderful fashion, as they always do, and pushed the podcast up over 700 subscribers on YouTube, which is absolutely wonderful. Really appreciate that because, as I've mentioned on the show a number of times before, there are guests who will evaluate the worthiness of this show and their time by going to YouTube to see how big of a following there is. And it's really helpful to have as big a following as possible because on most podcatchers, you can't actually see how many followers there are. You can often see how many reviews there are. So please do drop a review or a like on your favorite podcatcher. Although I know that many of you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or something like that. But if you're not already a subscriber, do check out the YouTube channel. It's a face made for radio, and so I don't expect you to watch the YouTube videos at all. However, if you would not mind subscribing, that'd be really cool. But I digress. This is far beyond the topic of the day. I'm really excited about this episode. I know this is a little bit of a rehash for our longtime listeners. This was a topic that I covered several years ago together with Peter. Some of our newer listeners might not even know who Peter is. I was going to say who Peter was, but Peter very much still is. Peter's a very good friend of mine. Peter Boss was the host of the show, and I was his co-host for the first year and a half or so that the show was in existence. He is on to different ventures now and left the show about 2 years ago now, which is absolutely wild that it's been that long. But Peter's a wonderful man. He and I covered a number of episodes on mistakes that pro-lifers make. And I figured it was about time that we do a bit of a, not a rehash, but a deepening of one of the kind of areas, which are two mistakes that we often make as it pertains to how we respond to justifications that people make in defense of abortion. I spoke about a month or two ago about why we should almost always, if not always, start our conversations by addressing justifications, even if we need to pull them or draw them from the people that we're speaking with so that we can demonstrate the charity that we have towards pregnant mothers and fathers, so that we can identify the true reasons why many people support abortion and get this off to a very good start. And yet often we as pro-lifers make one of two, if not both, of these errors in conversation, one of which we should, I would argue, never make except for one occasion. The other of which we should not do quite yet except for one occasion. What are those two? The first that I'm going to talk about is refutations. When somebody brings forward a justification for abortion, whether, like I said off the top, it's something as absurd as overpopulation or whether it's something as heartfelt and heartbreaking as sexual assault, pro-lifers, myself included, have a tendency to want to refute the evidence or justification that somebody brings forward. This doesn't only come up in justifications. This also comes up when talking about the humanity of preborn children or about personhood or stages of development, basically contradicting people on the accuracy or legitimacy of what they've said. And so this often can be tongue-in-cheek. If somebody says to me, hey, I think abortion should be allowed because our world is already overpopulated, I might be tempted to contradict them out of hand by saying, whoa, we live in Canada. There's a ton of space. Overpopulation is a lie. our world is not overpopulated. This is a bad justification for abortion. That is a foolish and inaccurate, a poorly researched, whatever we want to call it, argument in defense of abortion. And because of that, you're going to have to come up with something better to defend your pro-abortion worldview. Please don't refute. Please don't refute the benign ones like overpopulation, the ones that you might seem to be absurd. Please also, and at times even more importantly, don't attempt to contradict or refute the more heartfelt and heartbreaking ones. When people have said to me, I think abortion should be allowed in cases of sexual assault, I have been tempted, and unfortunately I have made the mistake, and I know many others have made the mistake of contradicting or refuting that by suggesting, you know what, the Guttmacher Institute, Planned Parenthood's own research arm, has admitted that less than 5% of abortions are performed on victims of sexual assault. Therefore, this is such a minuscule problem that we're trying to hide all of our abortions behind. This is a bad or foolish or unfair, inaccurate, whatever you want to call it, argument in defense of abortion. Come at me with something better. We don't want to refute for a number of reasons. We don't want to refute, first of all, because it deepens an attitude of confrontation. It deepens the attitude that this is a me versus you confrontation, that there's going to be a winner and a loser, and guess what? You're losing. Guess what? What you just said is bad or wrong or inaccurate or unfair. You're going to have to do something better if you're going to win this argument against me. And don't get me wrong, I love winning arguments. But I love winning arguments when I win people, first and foremost. And at the end of the day, we need to win people, because confrontation for many people, whether it's regarding abortion or other controversial things, or even things that might not be that controversial, confrontation for a lot of people spurs a fight or flight attitude that, you know what, I don't want to lose, therefore I'm going to avoid this situation. Or I am going to dig down deep and I'm going to fight tooth and nail to make sure that I don't lose. And we see that in the conversations about abortion all the time. When we deepen that attitude of winner, loser, me versus you confrontational attitude, we have a lot of people who say, oh, well, I don't think about abortion very often. I don't really care. I'm not really interested. I'm not going to talk to you. Or we have people turn around and dig in deep and throw all kinds of ad hominem attacks at us and try to start nitpicking our terminology and getting down into the weeds and all this kind of thing, neither of which are productive either for the conversation or, far more importantly, for preborn children. Because at the end of the day, we have to accept the fact that unless we can draw people to the pro-life worldview, babies will keep dying, right? The status quo is babies dying. The status quo is people supporting abortion. And unless we can draw them to the contrary, they're going to persevere in that attitude. And so the person who walks away because they don't want to get into an argument or they don't want to lose an argument against me, that person is walking away still supporting abortion, still being abortion vulnerable themselves, still advocating for abortion amongst their peer group, still voting pro-abortion, the whole shebang, right? If I cannot draw them into a conversation, then they will continue supporting abortion and more babies may die because of it. Similarly, if they hunker down and get into a spirit of confrontation even further and refuse to accept defeat and just hammer me with ad hominem attacks and tiny little challenges on wordings and all this kind of thing. If they are desperately trying to defend their worldview because they don't want to lose, I mean, nobody likes losing anything. And so if they are trying to simply stave off defeat, then again, I don't win. And if I don't win them, then babies continue to die, right? If they hunker down, if they get into this attitude of, I will not accept defeat, I will not allow you to reason with me or invite me to change my mind and draw me towards that path, then, and they walk away continuing to support abortion, then they are still very vulnerable for having an abortion themselves, influencing those around them to have abortions, voting pro-abortion, maintaining the abortion status quo. And so those refutations are not going to be productive, and often they're not going to be accurate either. A quick aside regarding sexual assault, that notion that less than 5% of abortions are performed on mothers who are victims of sexual assault, not only is that incredibly callous to say, I would argue it's very inaccurate as well. I have personally spoken to hundreds of victims of sexual assault, the overwhelming majority of whom have never told anybody else that they were victims of sexual assault. They've never told law authorities. They've never told friends or family members. They probably didn't tell the abortion provider when they had an abortion afterwards that they were sexually assaulted, because people are desperate to move on from this, because our counseling and our support and our advocacy is atrocious. Our legal prosecution is appalling. Majority of people who go through this heinous experience never tell anybody, except for maybe you and I on the street corner, because we are something of a social confessional. They see us and they say, that person is never going to see me again. That person is not going to judge me for who I am, who I was pretending to be, where I was, what I was doing, anything like that. The amount of Stockholm syndrome that goes into sexual assault and people victim blaming themselves or being concerned that they are going to be victim blamed, it is absolutely appalling and absurd. Don't refute heartbreaking or ridiculous cases like overpopulation. I say overpopulation because I think that the vast majority of people, especially listening to this podcast, would probably agree with me that overpopulation is not the conundrum, but rather life expectancy, but not with regards to the years of life expectancy, but quality of life expectancy, and also poor distribution of resources. I think that we could get into a long conversation about that, but I don't want to spend 45 minutes talking about why food is not getting to Somalia, only to have them jump on their bus and have gotten no further on the abortion conversation. So we're not going to refute. We are not going to deepen this attitude of confrontation, winner, loser, but rather we are going to try to build a bridge through common ground, analogy, and question. The common ground is first and foremost and vitally important to demonstrate that this isn't a me versus you. This is a let's work together to find solutions to the crises in our world. And in that pursuit of solutions, let's understand the underpinning principles for how we can solve the problems in our world, that we don't solve problems by killing innocent humans. That doesn't mean that problems don't exist, and that doesn't mean that problems aren't necessary and warranted. It just means that we can't solve them by killing children. How do we solve them? Let's work together to solve them. And that leads me to my second point. But before I do that, I said that there's one exception. There's one exception for when refutations may be appropriate. And the only exception that I can think of is if you were in a formal debate. I rarely engage in formal debates. I don't think they're particularly productive, because I feel like in a increasingly polarized world, you end up missing the mushy middle entirely because of the ferocity of the two extremes. You have people go in there that are radically and unequivocally supportive of abortion, radically and unequivocally rejecting abortion, and not incredibly productive. And so I'm not a big proponent of formal debates anyways. However, I can see value in a formal debate or in a modified formal debate in charitably refuting, because in those cases, your target audience is not necessarily the person that you're speaking with. When I have engaged in formal debates in the past, sure, I would love to change the heart and mind of the person that I'm debating against. However, my primary audience has become the observing and passive audience. And so in that case, I think that it can be appropriate at times to charitably refute arguments, to demonstrate inaccuracies, unfair conclusions, inappropriate conclusions, that kind of thing. And so when you watch a debate, when you watch Stephanie Gray Connors debate somebody, when you watch Micah Rosendahl debate somebody, they are absolutely phenomenal in those debates. And you might ask, well, why don't I take that exact same approach in a conversation with my friend, family member, or somebody in my community? And it's because who is your target audience? That in those cases, they do it very, very charitably, but they are trying to sway the audience first and foremost. And because of that, they need to demonstrate to the audience the inaccuracies or unfair statements made by their opponent. You do have a more formal and legitimate opponent, and you are trying to cultivate in some capacity a winner-loser construct. However, in the vast majority of conversations that I would encourage you to be having, meaningful conversations with people, not only in the mushy middle, certainly the mushy middle, people who are somewhat undecided or not incredibly committed to the abortion worldview. We need to talk to them too. We need to reach them as well. However, the majority of people that are in our society, let alone the majority of people that we are going to talk to, are going to be what we would characterize that mushy middle. I don't think that refutations or contradictions are going to get us very far, even if they're charitably done. And so please commit to that common ground analogy and question. When somebody brings up overpopulation, I agree with you that there's often not enough to go around, and there's a lot of people who are going without not only things that they want, but often things that they need. Imagine that the mother of a born child was struggling to provide, whether it was because of distribution of resources, whether it's because inaccessibility of resources. Would we ever suggest we solve that problem by killing her born child? If not a born child, why a preborn child? Flowing into the human rights argument that we've gone over a few times already. And so building common ground, demonstrating that, yeah, I get that there are people in our world who are going without, and it feels as though we just don't have enough to go around. Sexual assault, I agree with you. This is one of the most heinous crimes in our entire world. We need to do more to prevent it from happening in the first place. We need to do more to punish guilty perpetrators. We need to do more to support innocent victims, regardless of whether they become pregnant or not. Imagine the mother of a born child is living in an abusive relationship. When we get her out of that abusive relationship, she is still constantly reminded of that abusive partner every time she looks at her growing son. Would we ever suggest we cope with the reminder of that trauma by killing that innocent born child? If not a born child, why a preborn child? If we're not going to kill an innocent born child who is a constant reminder of that that abusive relationship, why would we kill an innocent preborn child? That's the route that we want to go, because we want to demonstrate not a spirit of contradiction and opponentship, of opposition, I suppose, but rather agreement, rather common ground on the crises and problems that face our world and the demand that they have for meaningful solutions. However, we need to clarify what solutions are appropriate and what solutions are not, and then commit ourselves to those solutions. As I mentioned, that leads me to my second point of something that isn't simply don't ever do. I would say refutation, like I mentioned, don't really ever do it. If you don't, if you're not in a formal debate, and even if you are in a formal debate, best not refute ever. Resolutions, trying to solve the problems that are facing pregnant mothers and fathers, is something that we should not do yet. Obviously, we have to do it eventually. Obviously, we have to address and solve these problems that mothers and fathers are faced with. I was literally talking to somebody yesterday while doing outreach at the Southern Alberta Institute for Technology, SAIT, which is post-secondary here in Calgary, Alberta, who just very quickly came up with, you pro-lifers don't care about children after they're born. You don't care about mothers and fathers. You don't care about actually solving problems. All you care about is telling people what solutions are appropriate and not. You're not actually here to help. Therefore, get out of our way. We live in a messy world. Don't shout down from your soapbox what can and can't be done, especially if you're not willing to help. I believe that we do need to help. Yes, I agree that for consistency's sake, we don't have to help for abortion to be an injustice. So if we want to sit on our soapboxes and never get our hands dirty and never actually help anyone, abortion is still wrong. I get it. However, I genuinely believe that we should be helping people. I think that we should be trying to help mothers and fathers in challenging pregnancies. And I know that many people in our audience are very committed to that through their support, not only through educational means and even political means, that are working to increase support for parents facing challenging pregnancies and experiencing other challenges through parenting. And certainly those who are involved in pregnancy support centers, whether it is for counseling, whether it's material support, whether it is other forms of support for pregnant mothers and fathers, whether it is adoption. And quick, not spoiler, but quick foreshadowing, on Thursday, we've got a bonus episode coming out where I talk with a representative of a beautiful, wonderful ministry that helps facilitate adoptions. And she's going to speak very eloquently and very meaningfully towards what we need to know about adoption, because adoption can be a beautiful and very meaningful solution to at least some of the challenges with at least some of the people that we are speaking with. And so we'll talk about adoption in depth on Thursday. However, at the end of the day, we also have to recognize that it is impossible to make pregnancy and parenting easier than how easy abortion is perceived to be. What do I mean by that? Well, for the majority of people that I speak with, and that I would assume that many of you are speaking with or could be speaking with, abortion is perceived to be a decision, maybe a decision even that a mother grapples with and struggles with, but nonetheless, a decision that she can make to have on a Friday afternoon and she's back to work on Monday. It's perceived to be something of a great reset button that for many people, even their friends don't need to know about their abortion, their family doesn't need to know about the abortion, the father of the child doesn't need to know about the abortion. It is a great reset button that sure, many mothers will recognize that there will be some emotional hardship that goes along with it. But tragically, there's more and more people that I speak with who don't even acknowledge or don't even appreciate that emotional hardship. And if that is the perception of abortion, if abortion is perceived to be this reset button that puts your life back to the way that it was before you found out that you were pregnant, it is impossible to make pregnancy easier than that, right? It's impossible, not only because pregnancy can be really difficult, both physically, emotionally, socially. It changes your life. But also parenting, generally speaking, is not just 9 months of pregnancy. And it's not just 18 years of that child legally being required to be under your roof, or 16 years or whatever emancipation is in your district. You're a parent for life, right? This radically changes your life for the rest of your life. And so I can appreciate how people are struggling with my entire future is changing in front of me. I had all of these images and aspirations in front of me, and now all of them are changing because of this child that is inside of me, or inside of my girlfriend or my wife or whomever it may be. I can appreciate how daunting that may be. And while we must make pregnancy and parenting more manageable and more approachable and all that kind of stuff, it's impossible to make it easier than how easy abortion is perceived to be. And so if somebody comes to me and says, hey, I think abortion should be allowed in cases of deep poverty, I can't just pull out my wallet and give them money and say, well, now poverty is no longer an issue. It's not just a matter of getting more government funding for pregnancy care centers. It's not just a matter of getting all of the billionaires in the world to put money towards pregnancy support. It's not just a matter of if we defund abortion, then we'll have more money, excuse me, to support parents. Because there are more struggles than just financial struggles, right? That financial struggles are often at the forefront of their mind because they're the easiest to grasp onto. But often there are family difficulties, there are relationship difficulties, there are things that simply cannot be solved with MasterCard. And so we don't want to try to resolve too early, because we need to demonstrate the principle that we don't solve problems by killing innocent humans, right? That it's not a matter of, okay, well, I'll go along with this pregnancy so long as you are financially supporting me. Laura Clausen from Choice for Two has been very vocal about not being willing to get into hostage situations. I'm going to kill my baby unless you do X, Y, Z. That's not appropriate, because that sets up a very, very detrimental attitude. And it's something that pro-lifers, you might be able to win the day, but you may not be able to win the war, as it were, because there are always going to be more difficulties. There's always going to be more challenges and problems. And if this child's life is constantly resting on whether or not you are bankrolling the support, I mean, what happens after the child is born? Are we going to say, okay, well, you're going to kill your two-year-old unless we provide a new stroller and a new car seat and all this kind of stuff? No, we need to demonstrate the principle through common ground, analogy, and question, and then building into the humanity of preborn children. Do we agree that all humans should get human rights? If something is growing, even from one cell to two cells to four cells, isn't it alive? If that living organism has human parents, isn't he or she a living human? And wouldn't that make abortion a human rights violation? We need to demonstrate the principle that we cannot solve these justifications, these problems that we are faced with by killing innocent humans before we can really open the door for the material or alternative solutions. Because until we take the option of abortion off of the table, we're not going to be able to have a meaningful conversation about adoption, because adoption is going to be more challenging than how challenging abortion is perceived to be. Parenting is going to be more challenging than how easy abortion is perceived to be. Therefore, we have to change the perception around abortion. We have to achieve the perception of being a human rights violation before we can really pursue these alternative, more appropriate, life-giving, all this beautiful stuff, solutions. Okay, so don't resolve yet. Once you have buy-in, once you have I acknowledge that abortion is a human rights violation, what are my alternatives? Okay, cool. Now is your opportunity to start talking alternatives. Now is your opportunity to start talking about adoption. Now is your opportunity to start talking about the support available at the pregnancy care center or at your church or whatever it may be. Now is the opportunity to start resolving the problems, but only after you have invited them and they have embraced the principle that we cannot kill humans to solve problems and that abortion is a human rights violation. Removing that option from the table, now we can talk about the other options, because we're not competing against a phony and too good to be true kind of option of abortion. Okay, so hopefully that makes sense. Refutations, don't do them. Don't do them ever in your conversation, with the tiny maybe exception of in a formal debate, charitably refute for the sake of your consumer audience. For resolutions, don't do it too early, but do it later on, with one exception. The one exception for the timing of your resolution is if I'm talking to somebody who is currently experiencing a crisis pregnancy. If I am out witnessing in front of an abortion facility, I very much want them to hesitate and say like, oh, I didn't know that there was an alternative option. I didn't know that there was support available. I didn't know that I could have an alternative option. And so if I'm encountering somebody at an abortion facility and they're walking in and they're saying, you know what, I want to have an abortion, I can acknowledge that at times it might still be appropriate to lead with the principle that abortion is a human rights violation and get them thinking about the life of their child and what abortion will do to them. However, tragically, for many people, they have already aborted that child in their mind. They have already committed to the idea of abortion. And to achieve that principle can be a very, very difficult uphill battle. It's always an uphill battle in that 11th hour ministry in front of an abortion facility. However, if I can get somebody to pause or hesitate by saying, we can help you, or there is help available, or let us help you, and let's talk about the help that is available to them and talk about parenting courses and really mine into the challenges that they are experiencing and speak for a time about the support that's available, that's probably going to allow them to at least hesitate. But it's not going to be sufficient. You're not going to be able to rely solely on resolution, because for many people, I know very few people who have had abortions, and I have spoken to literally thousands of people who have had abortions, and very few of them were a matter of like, all I needed was one parenting class and I wouldn't have had the abortion. They may say that afterwards, but I have a hard time embracing that as true, because most people appreciate at least some degree of the weight of going into that abortion clinic. And so I want to cause them to hesitate, but I still need to demonstrate the principle. And we have wonderful, wonderful advocates recently featured. Meg Woodard, who's the executive director of Allies, the Alberta Life Issues Educational Society, supporting both the Back Porch in Edmonton and some initiatives here in Calgary. So often we need to allow for that hesitation while still persevering with the principles, once we get them hesitating, to understand the injustice of abortion, because they're still going to confront greater difficulties and difficulties that we might not have perfect solutions for. Not that abortion is a perfect solution, but understanding that factor. And so in those moments of absolute crisis, when you're doing 11th hour ministry, when you're talking to somebody who is currently experiencing a crisis pregnancy and heavily considering abortion, it may be very meaningful to lead that conversation with the resolution and the support that's available to get them to hesitate, to open the door wide enough for you to be able to talk about the principles underlying the injustice of abortion. So hopefully that makes sense. That's 30 minutes talking all about what we should not be doing. We're not refuting. We're not resolving. Instead, we are committing to common ground, analogy, and question, building that understanding that we are on the same page. There are problems in our world that demand solutions, analogies to demonstrate the principle that we don't kill innocent humans to solve problems, asking the question, what is the difference between a born human and a pre-born human? From which point we take on the human rights argument, as we talked about on numerous episodes. And if necessary, we'll dive into personhood, but I won't get into that there because it's already a relatively long episode. So I hope that makes sense. May God bless you abundantly wherever you're at, however many hours are left in your day.